Hire for culture and attitude, train for skill. I focus on that and less ego. I'm really about humble, hungry, and smart. It's so simple, right? And humble, hungry, and smart. And smart doesn't mean IQ, it really means EQ.
Welcome to another episode of Higher Learning. I'm your host, Oz Rashid. This isn't just a podcast, it's a front row seat to how elite leaders build iconic teams. The kind of leaders who spot potentials others overlook, who build cultures people don't want to leave, and who set the bar and then raise it. Work and how we work is evolving at a rapid pace like no time in our history. Our guests will give you insights on how to stay out in front when it comes to leadership, management, AI, and developing skills that actually matter. Whether you're a founder, hiring manager, or just obsessed with building teams the right way, this is your spot. First time here, welcome, hit that subscribe button, drop a rating, and tell a friend who gets it. To our longtime listeners, as always, I appreciate you. Now let's get to today's guest, and I want to do a little bit of an intro so you know who we're talking to. From building networks to building people, Mandy Monk's career path is anything but traditional. She started out as a network engineer. That's right, the future chief people officer of True Food Kitchen began her career not in HR, but in IT. And that unique foundation is exactly what's made her such a force in the people space. Mandy's led people strategy at some of the most well-known brands in the QSR world, Pizza Hut, Wingstop, and most recently, True Food, where she helped scale operations, elevate culture, and build talent systems that actually work in a high, fast-paced, high-growth environment. But what really stands out is she doesn't play by the typical HR playbook. Mandy challenges the way most companies think about talent. She looks past the resumes and rigid career paths and instead sees potential and adaptability and the grit, the real markers of success. With all that, so excited to talk to you today. Mandy, how are you?
I am fantastic. Happy Taco Tuesday. Yay.
Taco Tuesday. Teal Tuesday, I thought.
Teal Tuesday.
Yeah, okay. Just making sure.
Yeah,
I really appreciate you taking a little bit of time for me. Quick question. We got to start here. I love tacos. Have you ever worked at a place that made great tacos?
Well, I'm working on it. True Food made some pretty good tacos. They had some breakfast tacos when we did our brunch menu. Those were pretty good. Obviously, I worked for Yum Brands and Taco Bell. I'm not sure if you'd call those. Those are pretty good tacos.
You have cut that out, man. You are literally talking to the world's most like favorite Taco Bell fan. There is my family literally needs Taco Bell. I would say once every 2 weeks, if not once a week. We love our Taco Bell at my house.
On my honeymoon, I went to Taco Bell. Isn't that hilarious?
I love that. Yeah. All right. So listen, I want to get into it. Let's talk about it. I mentioned it in the introduction. You're formerly the chief people officer at True Food. You're an HR leader at Wingstop, among many other HR roles in what I like to call QSR, the quick service restaurant space. But you started your career in technology as a network engineer. As I mentioned, that is not your typical path. So I'm super interested to know, tell us about that beginning point and then how you started to make the pivot into people and human resources.
Yeah, I started as a network engineer and programmer for an insurance company. And one of the things that we really struggled with was that in paying claims, we were drawn to really old school type technology. And we needed a way to really speed up process, to automate and get into the newer world around how do we, you know, make things better, easier, faster for our claims processors and adjusters. And so I helped custom build as the CIO for the company, a claims paying system that we customized. And somebody had to train the team on how to use that. And who better to do that than who helped design and build it. And I absolutely fell in love with training people. And I had already led my help desk teams as more of a knowledge builder. So that was already, instead of just, hey, fix it and move on, I was really a, hey, teach the people, teach them how to fish, teach them how to find, you know, and it'll help us, it'll help them, and we'll be in a better place. So it was always about knowledge building for me. And so that really shifted my career into a focus around learning and developing people and really focusing on talent in a different way.
So not only were you you didn't just have a cup of coffee as a network engineer, you rose up into a chief information officer and then found out that you love learning and development and people operations, essentially, through training people on technology you had built. I find that, and I'm lucky enough to know a few CIOs, I find that the best ones I know are people-first leaders. And that you don't always find it that way, but the best, most strategic, visionary ones are people that can get people to jump on, you know, and see their vision and then help develop them and help compensate them and help do bring in and attract some of these things that we put into the HR bucket, they do that better than anybody else. So I'm just interested, how did being a people first leader help you as a CIO besides the training and development? What other areas did you maybe rely on?
I mean, I relied on all the areas, to be honest. I mean, it was a relatively small company. I started, I was employee number 22. And by the time I left, we were close to 200. So it had grown quite a bit. And through that space, it was always about teaching and growing and learning more about people. And as I continued to talk to them, a lot of IT people are like, let me just like get out of the way and let me just fix it. And then I'll go on. I wanted to have conversations like, tell me what you were doing and how did this work? And maybe it's something we can actually fix and change. If this is the way you normally do it, maybe this is something we need to change in the system or the program or how we do things versus just saying, no, this is the way you do it. And so I was always thinking about what's next and what's better for the people. And so I was always having conversations with the teams around what technology do you need that will get you the best of your people? Instead of saying, well, you need a certain skill set to make this work. And I was kind of the opposite direction, right? Like I can teach you the technology. And if I can't, then I haven't built it right.
That's amazing. And it reminds me of a story early in my career. So I worked in a very big Fortune 500 and I was just brand new into it. And one day my computer wasn't working. So I managed to get a hold of somebody on the help desk, called him and said, hey, I need some help. My computer's not working. And this is about like 3 weeks into a new job. And he came up and it took about 15 minutes to get there, right? He's in a different part of the building, comes up and then looks at my computer and he goes, yeah, you need to plug it in. And he plugged it in and I was like, oh my God, it was so embarrassing. So I learned my lesson there, but you're right. Sometimes, right, teaching and helping people understand is a lot better than just doing it for them, which sometimes you see a lot in technology, kind of like get out of the way, let me handle it, like you mentioned. So let's ask the inverse now. You grew up through HR, chief people officer. Did you see that your technology savvy helped you in that role as well?
It did. When I got out of technology, I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I really want to focus on people. But it just hung around and just stayed, right? And so it really did make a big difference. If you think about technology, it's very process focused, right? It's very step-by-step process focused. And while there may be multiple ways to do things, it's still very linear or process focused. And so that really helped me as I think about HR and I think about just working with companies and teams around process reengineering or how do we simplify things? Like sometimes we make things way too hard, right? Like let's just try to make it easy and simple. And that really kind of stuck with me as I grew into my HR space, but so did looking at talent and so did just technology in general. I mean, I have one client at the moment doing an HR implementation. This will be my 55th HR implementation, HRIS implementation in my career. And I keep saying I'm not going to do another one, but I learn something new every time. And I really just come at it as a very different approach for people and really about process and really focusing on, let's look at your talent. Let's make the system do what it needs to do so your people can focus on the right things.
So Mandy, I got to tell you, I want to follow up with you now. We have some software we've built that's around interview management and hiring experience. I want to get your feedback there. You have a really interesting crop blend of experience that'll help. So write that down. I'm going to get back to you on that a little bit offline. I want to ask about this because I mentioned the best CIOs I know tend to be people-first leaders. The best HR leaders I know tend to challenge the status quo, think outside the box, right? And then really understand their business. So you and I were talking about how most people tend to look at talent very linearly, right? And you take a little bit more of an out-of-the-box approach that I just found really ingenious. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, people come from so many different backgrounds, right? And where they started may not be where they end up, but there are so many things that identify a good talent. And it isn't necessarily in their specific space. You know, I'll take an example of, I had a great restaurant chef who was phenomenal at the inventory side. And he put together some really clear processes. And I was like, okay, your typical chef doesn't do that. Now, you do have chefs who have a lot of detail as it comes to recipes and it comes to putting things together, but you don't normally see them in a process side. And so I began to have conversations with him around, where do you want your career to go? So I really ended up pulling him into an innovation perspective and a finance perspective. This is going to be interesting because mostly your chefs are not in there from a finance perspective, but around like the actual Like, let's build the recipe, and then how do we formulate that into a cost, right? Into driving those pieces. So he could put the recipe together. How do you then standardize that into like a broad brand perspective, add the finance piece around it to say, how much money can we really make from this? That's not going to blow the guests out of the park. And he was able to really jump to from being a chef to really being a finance chef innovator, for lack of a better term. And so it really just is really about having conversations with people and thinking differently about how they might use their skill set outside of what they're doing today.
Do you remember how he answered that? Did he have like a concrete idea of where he wanted it to go?
He didn't.
And then you helped kind of guide him on that and say, okay, let's work. Okay.
Yeah. I want to be executive chef. And I'm like, no, beyond that. Yeah, I get it. You want to be executive chef. Cool. Yeah. But beyond that, where do you want to go? And so we just began to have conversations around, well, what about this? And what about that? And he would tell me about his day to day and some of the things he's done. And it's really about listening to people and having conversations and understanding what they're good at. I tell people all the time when I'm coaching mentors or mentees or I'm coaching other people, don't think about a job title. Think about what do you want to do? I use the old philosophy back from, there was a book called Color My Parachute. I don't know if you remember that book.
No, I haven't read it, no.
In chapter four or five, I remember it so closely that I remember the chapters. So you build a flower. And so the soul of the flower is really you, but the petals identify the things that you like to do and what you're good at. And so it really begins to then see what job titles you can get to by thinking about what are the things you like to do. And so I have people, you know, because most people are visual and they could build a little flower, right? And so just write some things down to begin thinking about how your life might be different if you don't think about a title that you're shooting for. Because I can't tell you how many times in my career I've talked to companies, they didn't have a job. They didn't have a job title. It was like, here's what I want to do. Here's what I can do for you. And they're like, okay, we'll make it work. So sometimes it's about having the right conversations, but knowing what you want to do and what you like to do and what you're good at. If you can communicate that, you can really drive that forward.
I really love that. What a simple but powerful thing to ask somebody, where do you want your career to go? And then you took it the next step too, because so many people, when you ask them that for the first time, they're going to be a little bit like befuddled. Like, I'm not really sure. And then you took the time though to draw it out. And that person eventually goes on to have success. And I love what you said around the flower petal. You know, what I'm familiar with is the Japanese principle of Akagi. And really what that comes down to is, what am I good at? What can I make money with? What does the world need? And I think it's, what am I passionate about, or what do I enjoy, right? And if you can find how you combine those things, that's your center of excellence. That's where you can be doing something that you feel purpose. You feel great about what you're doing. And I think one of the best things you can do as a manager or a leader, or if you're in the recruiting business like I am, is help people find that and then give them that purpose. Because I think we've seen it a lot. There's a lot of people that aren't engaged with their work. They're working for the weekend and things like that. And hey, that's not to say that there's not many great things going on outside of work. But gosh, if you're going to spend so much time plying a trade, you might as well find something that gives you that purpose, that gives you that excitement. Do you have another example of maybe like sort of there a little bit, is that learning agility is really important, right? The ability to be a quick learner and adapt. It doesn't matter if you want to do X. If you can't pick it up quickly, then you're going to probably have a problem scaling. Can you give me another example, maybe throughout your career, maybe different than the chef, of somebody that took on a new role that was out of their capacity initially, but over time flourished?
Yeah. Another example is a general manager that I knew. He is now the VP of technology. And I mean, who thought a general manager in a restaurant?
I will tell you what I thought. The network engineer who became a chief people officer, but keep going.
Well, true. I mean, was just a true people person. And he really drove one of the best restaurants I had ever seen as a general manager, and just was always thinking out of the box, always thinking differently, and just had a passion for technology. Not that I would say he was great at it initially, but I just think he was curious, right? He was always asking questions. Well, can the system do this? If it would just do that, I can do that. And I'm like, actually, it can. And all you need to do is X, Y, Z, right? And so it was really talking with him about, well, if I can get my schedule to be like this, what can the technology do to help me? Or what about this particular tool on reservations? What if I did this, right? And so he was always asking questions and being really curious. And then he just ended up having a aptitude for technology in general. And so I could tell him very quickly, hey, if you can make it do this, you know, that'll get you where, and he would go figure it out. And so I didn't have to hold his hand the whole time. And literally he grew up into, you know, he became a restaurant, you know, became a help desk person first and then kind of worked his way up. And like I said, now he is the vice president of technology at a restaurant brand. And so super proud of him and just how he continues to like sit and talk to people around and ask the right questions. What are you trying to accomplish in your business? Not what technology do you need?
Big thing that you said that stood out to me is a lack of ego, right? To go from being a general manager and doing your job really well to taking a step back at the help desk to move your way back up. I say all the time, taking a step back sometimes means you take two steps forward in your career. I did a lot of that in my 20s. It paid off. I recommend everybody do it. But I think sometimes people just don't have either the willingness or the ability to do that. And it can really hold back to getting the academy, getting that how you color your parachute.
Careers are really not a career ladder anymore, right? It's really, I call it a jungle gym, right? It's that sphere where you can go up, down, sideways, all around. Like there's no right or wrong answer, nor truly just a ladder where you're focusing on going up. It's really broadening your scope and responsibilities and looking differently about where's your career going.
I really love that visual. Jungle gym is great. Let's talk a little bit about the hiring side. You've obviously hired a lot of people for your own team and for other organizations as a chief people officer. So I'd like to understand from your perspective, maybe, you know, a couple sentences. Let me know what your core hiring philosophy is.
Yeah, really simple. Hire for culture and attitude, train for skill.
Oof.
I focus on that and less ego. I'm really about humble, hungry, and smart. So Glenn Cioni's book, it's so simple, right? And humble, hungry, and smart. And smart doesn't mean IQ. It really means EQ, right? It's about the emotional intelligence side and not necessarily about the IQ side. And so it's so simple. It's so relevant. I focus on those things, attitude and culture, train for skill, because I can pretty much train you anything. You know, if you get that and you get the right attitude, you get the curious people, you get the humble, you get those pieces, they're going to go far.
Yeah, I'm interested real quickly, though. So the chief people officer, a lot of times you're setting the culture for the organization. A lot of times that's what's seen as kind of part of the remit for that job. And you worked in other levels of HR capacity. I'm interested. You've worked at different companies that I would assume have somewhat different cultures. How much of that is portable based on what you believe versus what the specific company's culture and needs are? And how do you adapt that maybe in an interview situation?
Yeah, good question. I would tell you that profiles of various roles, like a general manager and things like that in a restaurant or in specific companies, a manager's job is X, right? As a profile, those values and or behaviors are going to be similar. Mission vision of an organization is going to be different. And the key values that they're looking at might be different. If you look at what the values of an organization are pulling in, less about the behaviors, though the values are what's going to drive what you look at from a potential and a profile perspective. And then that's what really builds the culture, the values and the behaviors. Those two things put together is the how you accomplish things versus the what, right? The what's the metrics and all the other things. The culture is really the what and the how you accomplish those as you move forward.
Great answer. What if I ask you about a memorable interview? What comes to mind when I say maybe you were interviewing, maybe you were interviewing somebody? You don't have to name names. We're just interested in the stories.
Won't name names nor company, but this is not necessarily a good one. So
those are the best ones. Please share.
It didn't even happen during COVID time, but it was when I was doing a technology interview. I was interviewing someone else and we were on a Zoom call. I don't even think that was the technology at the time, but it doesn't matter.
Sounds
I was on video.
Yeah.
They were at home sitting on their couch, totally fine, right? They were dressed appropriately, all good. All of a sudden something flies across the screen and I like kind of startle, right? Because I wasn't expecting that. And then the next thing I know, another thing comes. On her shoulder were these two birds. So, I mean, they were cockatoos. Don't get me wrong. They were beautiful birds. And then another one came and ended up there was like five or six in the background. And I'm like, okay, like really wasn't sure. Obviously, that paused our interview a little bit. And I kind of was like, okay, how can I use this in the best course of the conversation? Like, how do these birds like help you find the best environment in which to work?
Oh,
and
man.
How are you driving this? But that just totally threw me for a loop.
So let me set the scene. So she logs on, no birds.
No birds.
And then during mid-interview, the birds just start flocking to her, no pun intended.
Yes.
like a menagerie and just start sitting on her shoulders? I mean, was this free AI? Maybe they were giving her answers. Like, do we know?
Free AI. No, I don't think they were. That's funny. They weren't talking, thankfully, but we had to have a conversation around, like, what would that be like if you were
with a
client? No, we didn't end up hiring her. It wasn't about the birds, although that led to multiple other conversations around whether or not that was the right environment or not.
That's one of the best stories we've heard. That's amazing. I love that. Yeah. What's your favorite question? Do you have one that's a go-to question that you love to ask in interviews?
I do. I don't know that it's ingenuous or anything, but the question I ask is, tell me what's not on your resume that I should know about you.
What's some interesting answers you get with that? Where do people usually go with that?
You know, I get some pretty interesting ones. I get some things around like hiking Mount Everest and taking off a year and finding themselves. I get things about their family. I get things about their career that I maybe wouldn't have found by just reading their resume. So I feel like it gives me some insight into the person. For me, it's about how much can I get them to tell me the story? If I can get people to tell me the story of them besides tell me about yourself, right? Everybody hates that question, including me. And so I want to know what's not on the resume that makes you you.
And I got to imagine there's been times where that was maybe one of the primary reasons you hired somebody because you learned something that you might not otherwise. And I don't know, maybe the reverse is true too. Maybe there was times where you're like, oh, I didn't know if I needed to know that. I love that though. That's a really good one because now you're getting to the cut of what makes a person. I always like to say that the resume is at best 10% of the story, who they are. Like some of the things that I find to be most interesting is some of the things that might've informed you as a professional are, hey, my dad was in the army and we traveled a lot. And so I got exposed to all these different cultures. Or, hey, I opened up my first lemonade stand at 8 years old and I have this very entrepreneurial mindset. Like, those are the type of things that you're not going to see on someone's standard CV, right? But that really can explain something to you about the person. So I think that's a great question.
Finding the right talent for your team doesn't have to be a struggle. Meet Aon Hire, the world's first hiring experience management platform designed to transform the way you hire. Powered by AI, Aon Hire takes the hassle out of every step in the process. From smart resume analysis to customized interview questions, it saves you time, money, and effort. Plus, with real-time insights from every interview, you can quickly identify top candidates, reduce turnover, and stay on budget. And forget about note-taking, Aon Hire takes care of that for you. Ready to revolutionize your hiring process? Visit aonhire.com and get started today.
All right, let's talk about, you know, the failures, all right? Because we all miss when it comes to hiring. When you miss on somebody, can you look back on a theme or something that maybe you had to correct over time?
Yeah, I would say it's where I may not have been as tied in to that team's culture, right? Their nuance of the culture. Because look, in every organization, there's always teams or departments that take it one step further or take it one step less. And so I should have delved in further into the dynamics of that team and understanding how that team worked together. I would say that was probably one of my biggest ones, and it definitely a lesson learned to really understand, not just assume that they're following the company culture, but really understand that team and how they work and their dynamics and what they're looking for, because that's what's going to make the success or failure of a person stepping into that.
You're just so spot on, because what I find in a lot, especially big highly matrixed organizations, is you'll have a company culture. And a lot of times you'll have a functional culture, right? In finance, we do it this way. In sales, we do it this way, right? And then you'll have definitely, you'll have the team cultures. And what's really hard about that is that sometimes, especially at the company level, that's more aspirational, what we put on the website, than it is actually truly how we operate. I find that once you start to get to the team level, you really do start to get a good understanding of dynamics and how things work and what's needed to take things to the next level or what to make things additive. So I think that's awesome. Yeah, one more question about the hiring side. So is there anything about the current standards process technology that frustrates you?
Yeah, and actually I've begun to have some conversations with various technology companies about this. And this is, everybody wants to move really fast, but each company is so focused on how do I collect their information? How do I get them to log in and how do I secure security, right? So you have to log in, you've got to do multi-factor authentication, you've got to go through the process, you've got to create an account. And I can't tell you how many people I've spoken to. Very seldom does anyone go back and look at the status of their application. Like, they just don't, right? So why do they have to log in? Why can't the system do that for them? They have all their information. right? They have everything. Why can't they create an account for them and send them an email that says, here's your account, should you choose to want to go look at it? That would speed up the process. So if we're talking about, we want people to be able to have an application in less than 10 minutes, really less than that. But if we want them to have a full application process that they're ready to submit in less than 10 minutes, we've got to think out of the box. And right now, we're not.
You just stepped right into my wheelhouse. So like one of the things that when I look at, and I'll take it from a talent acquisition perspective, right? When I look at applicant tracking systems, what they are is passive data repositories, right? I'll take Mandy Monk's name and resume, then I'll move her through a workflow and I'll take notes and we'll make sure my documentation is tight. And it's all about governance, compliance, and risk aversion, okay? But I don't see how those tools do anything to make candidate experience better, empower your hiring managers and interviewers to make better decisions and collaborate better. And to me, it misses the entire point a lot of the times. And so that's why we're building what we're building and what I see with generative AI is putting the power in the hands of the individuals making the decisions and saving them time, cutting down that time to fill, making a more seamless experience, making sure there's responses to people that apply or need feedback. These are things that are severely lacking in our space and that I'm personally making my life's work to try to address. And it seems like you see the same thing. So that's great. And it makes me want to share what we're working on even more. So we'll do that after the fact. Let's talk about AI because we got into the technology aspect.
For sure.
I'm interested just in general, if you go anywhere with this, AI, HR, what do you see happening? How do you see it happening? What's going to happen there?
I see so much. In fact, I was just at a forum on site where we talked about AI for probably 3 hours and we could have talked about it for days. There's so much, right, coming and going relative to that, to where it's AI doing the interviews as an initial start, especially when you're thinking high volume. Now, I wouldn't necessarily say that's the right space for an executive interview, but if you're thinking about your cashiers, your people working on the floor, whatever that may be at a high volume aspect, what can you gain through that process very quickly to move that forward? I've heard things around, I can move from application to hire in 30 minutes or less.
Whoa.
With AI. That's phenomenal, right? We're not talking days, not days. We're talking minutes, right? Minutes. That's what we need to be looking at. How do we do that with AI? There's so many things from being able to interview through that process to answering their questions right online from a candidate experience to actually completing the application for them, right? All they got to do is, let me give you a question. I'm going to respond. You're going to type it in, right? I don't even need a resume because I'm going to give it to you all. I think there's value in that. I still think that there's still a human component to it all. And we can't forget that. It's not going to replace the human component. But where is the true need in the candidate experience for the human component that makes the most sense? And so that's really what we need to be thinking about. Instead of saying, I have to have a human component in every piece, let's talk about where is the key aspects to that. And if we're talking about we're hiring 160 people every 2 weeks or every day or whatever that is in that volume, like having a human touch at 160 people every single time is a lot, if you think about that. So if I'm hiring 100,000 people a year, that's a lot of people. That's a lot of headcount. That's a lot of dollars. What's the value of that? That really gets us back to, are we creating the right profiles? Are we creating the right job descriptions? Do we have a clear understanding of what we're looking for and how we're doing that? Are there ways to really dive into culture and attitude with assessments, storytelling, pictures, images, things that will help us drive things forward? So there's a lot of things in the hiring process, in that application process where AI pulls in. But there's even beyond that, onboarding and
talent and performance management, everywhere. All of it. So this is obviously an area I care deeply about, so I'll tell you where I stand on it. So I agree with what you're saying. I'm adamantly against AI avatars replacing the human-centric aspect of interviewing. However, to your point about high volume, here's what we're building and why I think it's important, right? So a lot of times there's where AI is agentic and replaces human touch, and then there's where it's co-pilot, right? And then it's augmenting what we do. My belief is that, so when somebody applies right now, they go into a black hole, they never hear from anybody. They're like, I hate that company. I don't like that. That's not a good feeling. In fact, they spray and pray just because they know they're not going to get responses. Well, what we're looking at doing, or what we're building right now, it's really around the interview aspect and managing that hiring experience. But when you apply to something on a posting, immediately our system will go through and it'll view the resume and say it just has an 85% fit or a 50% fit. If it's a 50% fit, they'll send a note saying, actually, you're lacking XYZ, but we're going to keep your resume on file for future opportunities. Instantaneous, right? If it's a 70% or higher, It's going to call you and you're going to get a voice AI agent that says, oh, excellent resume. We want to ask the following questions. Are you willing to work on site? Are you in this compensation range? Or some of these tactical questions, right? That's happening through a voice AI agent. Once they pass that process, now we start to move them into either some async things where it might be, depending on the company, background check, a technology assessment, a behavioral assessment, and then moving them into what I think is very important is that rapport you build, at least one interview, even at the high volume, yes, with somebody that you're going to work with. And replacing that to me would be a bad idea because I'm still going to work for somebody and I still want to know who I'm working with. And then I get to ask them questions like, what's not on your resume that I need to know about you, right? But does that need to take hours upon hours of time? No, that can absolutely be streamlined and we can get rid of some of the tactical things from an AI perspective and then really enhance that human experience. So I love where you went with that. I think there's a lot of really cool things going on out there. And that's, you know, listen, the reason we started building software a couple of years ago is because we'd work with, we've done 15,000 hires in 43 different countries. We've seen almost everything you can see in the hiring and interview process. And we figured that one of the biggest problems was that a lot of companies are running their hiring process very random and very unstructured. And then by using AI, we can actually save you timing, make you have better outcomes. And those things don't have to be mutually exclusive. So
I have seen two different ways where utilizing interviewing sort of video and an AI, we used it to say, tell us your story. That was the only question. Tell us your story. Some of these individuals don't have resumes and that's okay. I just want to hear your story, right? So then I know as I'm going into the interview with my general manager or whoever I'm talking with, I have something to play off of, right? The other was I used it two different ways. One, I was trying to hire a significant number of cooks that I needed to know they had knife skills. So I asked them to demonstrate their knife skills on the video. Another was I was hiring a bunch of trainers. And so I asked them to show me, to teach me how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Something very simple, right? Like I was going to actually follow their order. So I needed to know that you actually got a loaf of bread out. Like how detail oriented can you be, right? So there's some things I think that we can use it for without really going through the typical interview that you would think.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be robot talking to robot. There's ways you can enhance and save time and still get that, what I think is a very human-centric activity. Are you using AI day-to-day now? Like, what are you going to ChatGPT for? Like, how do you use AI?
Yeah, I actually, well, there's a couple of different things. One, I use one tool for all my note-taking. It is the best thing ever. And I can't tell you how many hours it saves me, but it's a free tool. I mean, you could certainly pay for it as well, but I use it. It captures my notes and then it summarizes the meeting notes immediately. So it starts with, here's all the action items and who in the meeting that action item belongs to. I can even have, I have buttons on my side where I can have it highlight recognition. I can have it highlight certain things that I want to call out later. It summarizes the meeting and then it has follow-up next step items as well automatically. Fathom.
Oh, Fathom. I'm familiar with Fathom. That's amazing.
I love Fathom. And then there's so many different things that you can do with that. So like immediately following a meeting, it goes out. I don't have to do anything. I do because I'm me. And so I have to review it to make sure it captured everything. But it's just pretty awesome. Other things I use it for, I am not the most, like I can't draw with like stick people. That's about all you get for me. So I use it for build me an image or create an image that signifies XYZ, right? So I'll use ChatGPT or other tools to build images that most of the people that I work with are very visual, right? They want a visual image and they don't want slides with a bunch of bullets. So give me a visual image that tells me that. So I'm creative in that, but then coming up with something is really challenging, right? It's very time consuming. So this will give me several examples and I can iterate multiple times through that process where I can come up with a few different examples that help me kind of drive through that. So those are probably my biggest ones. I do sometimes have it create slides, but for the most part, that's pretty easy for me. So
I love that. I think you've given some good ideas and maybe some people Fathom stock will pick up from here based on that.
Yeah, for sure.
That plug right there. Let's take a little bit of a different direction. I'm interested. Have you read a good book recently or maybe saw some content that you want to recommend for our listeners?
Oh, I'm a huge fan of Mel Robbins.
Okay.
She is pretty phenomenal, has been there, done that, has faced the bottom and the top. She has a couple of different books. One I'm reading now that she just came out with called Let Them. Which is really about your success isn't built off of anybody else, right? Let them think that way. Let them, if they have negative attitude towards you, let them, right? Why are you bothered by that? So don't let people hold you back, really, is the philosophy. And the other one that ties to that is her other book called The 5-Second Rule, which is, and have you read that one?
I have, yep.
Yeah, it's an awesome book. I love the thought of if you're really procrastinating or you're just not sure about something, just count backwards. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Not obviously slower than that, at least for me anyways. And it'll really kind of get you. You'll just go and kind of do those things. Don't let it hold you back. So I started with her because she did a TED Talk. And the one thing I took away, obviously being people-centric, is that we are all unique. Our DNA is not the same as anybody else. So how can we just be fine? Why are we not fantastic, fabulous, wonderful, right? Instead, we're just fine. And so I was like, she is so right. Like, we are one in quadruple bajillion numbers, right? We are unique. So how do we make ourselves be that way? And how do we bring out, I really took it as a, how do we bring out the best of people because they are unique? So how do we bring out that special piece of someone? And so I've gone into a couple of meetings where I say, okay, you know, I'll ask them how they're doing and they'll be like, oh, I'm fine. I'm like, nope, you can't be fine. You have to be fantastic. So what is it that we are going to do to focus on how to get you to fantastic? It's really a great way to really key into people and find out where they are. We never know what people are going through.
Yeah, I love that. One of the things I got out of the 5-second book, and it's something I repeat here all the time, and I've had a couple of different people, employees tell me, wow, this really changed my life, is I always tell people, anything you can do under 1 minute, do right away. Because what we end up doing is we just start stacking and piling up. Oh, I got to do this. I got to do that. I got to do this. And if you really just clear things off your plate the minute you get them and you can move on, I think that you can have a much clearer head and have more time to do some of the high important, maybe non-urgent things, some of the strategic things, some of the thinking through things that you're clearing off your plate and getting to do it right now and get it done if you can't get it off your plate. There's a lot of success in that. All right, last question before we move into our speed round. What's some advice that you would give your 20-year-old self that you didn't know then, but that you know now?
Take risk.
Did you not take a lot of risk at 20?
No, I did. But I didn't know that I was doing that.
Okay.
I didn't think of it as risk. And somebody said it to me before. They're like, you've taken so much risk in your career. And I'm like, I have? Okay. So, no, I mean, if you think about, here I was a CIO, right? I then moved into a technical trainer role. Very different space. Very different compensation. I mean, obviously, I had a lot of support from my family at the time. And, you know, I truly thank them. And they are a huge reason for my success. But I took a lot of risks. I didn't know that they were risk. I would say I was too stupid to realize that they were a risk. I just did it and said, oh, well, or I really wasn't thinking of it. My only option was to be successful. So I'm going to drive it forward. And maybe that's the key, is maybe it's don't think about the risk. Right? Because sometimes you just need to jump. And so I am where I am today because of those changes, right? I now have had two successful businesses. I had an IT company and I ran that for 8 years and then sold it and then really moved into HR space and then now have this business as well. And so I just feel like there's something to be said for taking risk.
Yeah, I think it's a brilliant thought. And I think risk is something that tends to compound over time. So like, if you had that feeling like you did, where do it early in your career rather than later, because I started the company right when I got married, I just had first kid, and you think that's a really risky time to do it. Well, I got 4 kids now. So it was in risk there now. So yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that's really good advice. Hopefully somebody's hearing that and that's going to give them the push they need to make the jump. All right, we're going to ask some quick lightning round questions and I'm going to throw some curveballs at you at the end. So be ready, okay?
All right.
This is for your personal preference. What's your ideal hybrid, remote, on-site work week?
Hybrid.
What days?
I usually like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday in the office typically, or vice versa.
Okay. And then, yeah, then maybe bookend. Okay.
Yeah, bookend.
I like that. What about, what makes a good meeting to you?
A clear focus, agenda. Setting expectations up front and not just having the meeting for meeting.
Okay. Honest question. In your last role as chief people officer, what percentage of your meetings were the good meetings?
I would probably say we did pretty good. I'd probably say 60%.
Is there a workplace trend right now that you think is either underrated or overhyped? Anything come to mind?
Workplace trend? Not really.
I'm going to go through 4 places that you worked and I want to hear your go-to order at each place. Okay.
Oh, yikes. Okay.
Right here. Wingstop.
Oh, order. Tell me what you mean by that.
Oh, just like what food? What do you get? Like your go-to meal?
Oh, my go-to meal. Well, I got to try all of them, which is the best thing ever, right? So we had 13 wings on the tray and you had to eat all of them as part of onboarding. I actually learned to love the garlic parm that I didn't originally love. So
garlic parm.
You know, having to try.
I love that. True.
The chopped salad.
Chopped salad. Okay, I'm writing these down because I'm going to probably order each of them this week.
Good, you should. Over here. Chop Sav.
Pizza Hut.
Yeah. Oh, stuffed crust pan.
I grew up on Pizza Hut. I'd said some of my nostalgia food. Last one, and you brought it up, not me. Taco Bell.
Ah, the tostada.
Tostada. With chicken, beef?
The beef.
Okay, we asked the hard-hitting questions here. We got to get to the bottom of these course. Important questions. Mandy,
yeah.
It's been an incredible time. I really appreciate you spending some time with me. I think this is going to be a great discussion. A lot of people are going to love it. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
Bye.